And the Lord spoke to Moses on Mount Sinai, saying, Speak to the children of Israel, and say to them, When you come into the land which I give you, then the land shall keep a Sabbath to the Lord. 6 years you shall sow your field, and 6 years you shall prune your vineyard, and gather its fruit. But in the seventh year there shall be a Sabbath of solemn rest for the land, a Sabbath to the Lord. You shall neither sow your field nor prune your vineyard. What grows of its own accord of your harvest you shall not reap, nor gather the grapes of your untended vine, for it is a year of rest for the land. And the Sabbath produce of the land shall be food for you, for you, your male and your female servants, your hired man, and the stranger who dwells with you. For your livestock and the beasts that are in your land, all its produce shall be for food. And you shall count 7 Sabbaths of the years for yourself, 7 times 7 years, and the time of the 7th Sabbath of years shall be to you 49 years. Then you shall cause the trumpet of the Jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the 7th month. On the Day of Atonement you shall make the trumpet to sound throughout all your land. And you shall consecrate the 50th year, and proclaim liberty throughout all the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee for you, and each of you shall return to his possession, and each of you shall return to his family. That 50th year shall be a jubilee to you. In it you shall neither sow nor reap what grows of its own accord, nor gather the grapes of your untended vine. For it is the jubilee, it shall be holy to you. You shall eat its produce from the field. In this year of jubilee, each of you shall return to his possession. And if you sell anything to your neighbor or buy from your neighbor's hand, you shall not oppress one another. According to the number of years after the jubilee, you shall buy from your neighbor, and according to the number of years of crops, he shall sell to you. According to the multitude of years, you shall increase its price, and according to the fewer number of years, you shall diminish its price. For he sells to you according to the number of the years of the crops. Therefore you shall not oppress one another, but you shall fear your God, for I am the Lord your God. So you shall observe my statutes, and keep my judgments, and perform them, and you will dwell in the land in safety. Then the land will yield its fruit, and you will eat your fill, and dwell there in safety. And if you say, What shall we eat in the 7th year, since we shall not sow nor gather in our produce? Then I will command my blessing on you in the 6th year, and it will bring forth produce enough for 3 years. For you shall sow in the 8th year, and eat old produce until the 9th year. Until its produce comes in, you shall eat of the old harvest. The land shall not be sold permanently, for the land is mine, for you are strangers and sojourners with me. And in all the land of your possession, you shall grant redemption of the land. If one of your brethren becomes poor and has sold some of his possession, and if his redeeming relative comes to redeem it, then he may redeem what his brother sold. Or if the man has no one to redeem it, but he himself becomes able to redeem it, then let him count the years since its sale, and restore the remainder to the man to whom he sold it, that he may return to his possession. But if he is not able to have it restored to himself, then what was sold shall remain in the hand of him who bought it until the year of Jubilee. And in the Jubilee it shall be released, and he shall return to his possession. If a man sells a house in a walled city, then he may redeem it within a whole year after it is sold. Within a full year he may redeem it. But if it is not redeemed within the space of a full year, then the house in the walled city shall belong permanently to him who bought it. Throughout his generations it shall not be released in the Jubilee. However, the houses of villages which have no wall around them shall be counted as the fields of the country. They may be redeemed, and they shall be released in the Jubilee. Nevertheless, the cities of the Levites and the houses in the cities of their possession, the Levites may redeem at any time. And if a man purchases a house from the Levites, then the house that was sold in the city of his possession shall be released in the Jubilee. For the houses in the cities of the Levites are their possession among the children of Israel. But the field of the common land of their cities may not be sold, for it is their perpetual possession. If one of your brethren becomes poor and falls into poverty among you, then you shall help him, like a stranger or a sojourner, that he may live with you. Take no usury or interest from him, but fear your God, that your brother may live with you. You shall not lend him your money for usury, nor lend him your food at a profit. I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, to give you the land of Canaan, and to be your God. And if any one of your brethren who dwells by you becomes poor, and sells himself to you, you shall not compel him to serve as a slave. As a hired servant and a sojourner he shall be with you, and he shall serve you until the year of Jubilee. And then he shall depart from you, he and his children, with him, and shall return to his own family. He shall return to the possession of his fathers. For they are my servants, whom I bought out of the land of Egypt. They shall not be sold as slaves. You shall not rule over him with rigor, but you shall fear your God. And as for your male and female slaves, whom you may have, from the nations that are around you, from then you may buy male and female slaves. Moreover, you may buy the children of the strangers who dwell among you, and their families who are with you, which they beget in your land, and they shall become your property. And you may take them as an inheritance for your children after you, to inherit them as a possession. They shall be your permanent slaves. But regarding your brethren, the children of Israel, you shall not rule over one another with rigor. Now if a sojourner or stranger close to you becomes rich, and one of your brethren who dwells by him becomes poor and sells himself to the stranger or sojourner close to you, or to a member of the stranger's family, after he is sold, he may be redeemed again. One of his brothers may redeem him, or his uncle's son may redeem him, or anyone who is near of kin to him in his family may redeem him. Or if he is able, he may redeem himself. Thus he shall reckon with him who bought him. The price of his release shall be according to the number of years from the year that he was sold to him until the year of Jubilee. It shall be according to the time of a hired servant for him. If there are still many years remaining according to them, he shall repay the price of his redemption from the money with which he was bought. And if there remain but a few years until the year of Jubilee, then he shall reckon with him, and according to his years he shall repay him the price of his redemption. He shall be with him as a yearly hired servant, and he shall not rule with rigor over him in your sight. And if he is not redeemed in these years, then he shall be released in the year of Jubilee, he and his children with him. For the children of Israel are servants to me. They are my servants, whom I brought out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God.
Now, before we begin, Yovel, or what's this called, Jubilee. It basically has a basic word that means that which is to flow freely. All right? So in the year of Jubilee, as we call it, it's a year when the person may flow or be free of what has happened to that person. And there's no exception to the rule, except the few that he has written here. The other thing that to me need to pay a little bit closer attention to is that's the 11th verse. Okay. Now he says, Jubilee shall that 50th year be unto you. Ye shall not sow, neither reap that which grows of itself in it, nor gather the grapes of it in thy vine undressed. Now, we're talking two types of products here, not everything. Tomatoes are not in there. Carrots are not in there. Not even lemons or apples. None of it there. That's not part of it. He's talking about what you sow. Sowing always has to do with seed, right? Being cast out in the field or in your crop. And the other one is grapes. We'll talk about those two specific things, which is very important that we kind of focus in on those two particular characteristics of what not to do. The next thing I want to talk about is the fascinating thing, which we were talking about, storage. I found that kind of funny, and we were talking about storing a food that lasts for 15 years or 120 years. Along comes God, has a different approach to it, doesn't he? We got this 7-year cycle, right? And we'll talk about that a little later. 7-year cycle, and he said, now in the 7th year, what are you supposed to do? You're not supposed to sow your crop. You're not supposed to go out there and harvest anything. You just take what you need for the ground for that time, period, point blank. And then he says, by the way, you will eat of the old storage. What do you mean, old storage? You mean you're supposed to store something aside in those years? Yeah, you're supposed to store something aside. Another very interesting word, we get down and look closer, what he says that he's going to do, when or if we do those things. So it's kind of funny when we're thinking about trying to store food that lasts for 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 years. Here God has a different approach to things. Now, you know, it's going to take a little thing called faith. Boiled down to, wow, what are we going to eat in the 7th year? Now he answers the question. Very fascinating wording he used. And so, with this in mind, I want to kind of, the book is about two basic things, right? In a sense, there's three basic things, really. I'm sorry. One of them is about the Jubilee year. That one is about the 7th year's rest. And the next one is about bond servants. And counting the value thereof is identical to counting the value of the crop. Did you notice that? Very fascinating. So we have a parallel here. Daniel probably could do it better than I can with the parallel. But here it said it and repeated. And all of a sudden there's a pattern here telling us something is going on. And we need to kind of look at the pattern. And it'd be fascinating for us to kind of analyze it a little bit and talk about it today. So now, what is your thoughts?
I just have a question. You said you didn't think that it really referred to like tomatoes or carrots, but they're sown from seed.
Right, but what we're talking, the reason why it's talking about a crop that is sown and grapes only, not talking about any other thing, just these two. Why did he say all foods? He didn't. He only named that which you sow, which you harvest. Harvesting is something you do by going out and getting grain. And up, you know, your tomatoes will last year after year after year. We got tomatoes that don't blow, they grow, and they grow, they grow. You pick them anytime you want, almost, you know. But what we're talking about, why these two particular things are very important, and the crop is a very important thing to hold back on for one reason. We have to kind of parallel, because everything in the Torah centers around wheat or grains of some kind and grain, the grape. Two main things. Now, you have to have, okay, the olive tree is going to reduce, right? You've got to get oil. You've got to keep pressing the olive tree. You've got to keep, that's not involved in this thing of do not harvest. You're not harvesting the olive tree for anything else except what God has in mind. He's not saying you cannot eat fruits and vegetables or things like that. That's not out there harvesting it. As we think of harvesting, biblically speaking, harvesting, not American thinking of harvesting. Biblical Hebrew, when it comes to harvest, always refers to one main thing. Either wheat or barley. There's a reason why it does that. And it has to do with something in the continuation of this book, this chapter, with people. Direct relationship to people. Right? Next, that's my input. Next.
Going to verse 46, my question is, and I've heard people say, it looks like God condones slavery. I mean, that someone owns somebody.
Correct.
And it goes on for the next generation. I mean, if someone inherited...
Are you thinking American slavery, or are you thinking biblical slavery? There's two different definitions of that word. American slavery is wickedness. But a bond servant means something's been sold to do something. And the person works for that person. They're not there to be beaten, slaughtered, thrown in a dungeon, thrown in the worst possible living conditions, and not allowed to eat, and separated, and never see one another again. No, that's not what the Bible says. An indentured servant is very, very similar to the thing. Now, what they're talking about is when a person is not in the house of Israel. We have to get to this parallel of why it is that way. Okay, I'll put it this way. We know from what we have read already that God has said to all of the house of Israel, every tribe and every member, you will be a kingdom of priests. Right? We got that, right? And out of that, he separated a certain family that was to be a different function of the priesthood. That out of that family, he picked a certain family to be the highest of all the priesthood. Right? Okay. Now, reverse the situation to modern times. Move yourself forward to our time. Here we have the Messiah. Who is he? What is he? He is the high priest. Right? Who are those who are, quote, of the priesthood? That were not the high priest. The apostles and the prophets, that's what the Apostle Paul said. The church is built upon something. The apostles and the prophets and the chief cornerstone, meaning the Messiah. We have the same pattern here. You see Apostle Paul talking about. It's the same pattern you see with the whole house of Israel. All right. So the pattern is, in the house of Israel, there's a high priest. And beneath the high priest are his immediate apostles, we call them, or immediate ones who serve him. Which is the Levite family. Right? And then beneath that, if I can use that word beneath that, comes the rest of the entire house of Israel. Alright? And he says, oh, that's it. No. There's also strangers and sojourners. There's also the Goyims. They're the Gentiles. The rest of the world. Now, when you really stop and think about this for half a second, where are we at today? I am not the high priest at all. I am not even of the second order, if I can use that terminology, of the priesthood. I may, which I highly doubt, that I'm of the third order, which would be the house of Levi. I don't think I'm there or that either. I'm down there with the rest of the house of Israel. Am I still a member of what God said at the very beginning? Member of the priesthood? Yeah. What is my function as an Israelite? Quote, end of quote. What is my function? Well, my function is to serve Whom? The Levites. That's what it's all about. Then the function of the Levites is to serve whom? The one family. We haven't gone to the point where the Levites, when they have to, quote, pay a tithe, they don't pay the tenth one in line. Their rules are entirely different. They must, out of the ten that they got, they must find the best one of the ten, and they give that one to the high priest. Whether it's the first one, second one, third one, fourth one, that one, they must get different rules for them, right? We're even about the houses. Houses, different rules for them, right? Unlike you or me, we have to go by different rules. And now the different rules for the Levites. Now, does God have a hierarchy part of government? God would probably say, yeah. We have God the Father. You got, who's next? God the Son. And what did Jesus say? He is less than me, equal with me. No, I am under him. I'm only on his right-hand side. I carry out what he has in mind, and his will be done and not mine. So when we look at this particular picture here, in the book of Leviticus, the 25th chapter, there comes this point of a unique period of time called the Jubilee. And your understanding of why would he pick the day of Yom Kippurim as the day that everything is flowing free. Why didn't he pick Passover? Why didn't he pick the first day of unleavened bread? Why didn't he pick the sixth, eighth day? Why didn't he pick the first day of days of a Feast of Tabernacles? Why didn't he pick some other time? Why this time? What does the day of Kippurim about? You are free. You are no longer there. You now are free. All iniquities, all transgressions, all sins are as if they never occurred. No more are you be bound by law, bound at any time, to fulfill and pay the consequences. Now here was a story of people, especially a poor man, who has to sell some of his belongings in order to survive. And what does the Bible tell us to do? We need to do something about it, right? We throw him into a poorhouse, right? Oh, we don't do that? Okay. We sell him for trash, right? Right? Oh, we sell him to be our slave so we can beat him up. Make him obey us or else he's dead. But he says, do not do vigor against them. You know what that old-fashioned English word means? You will not treat him like a piece of junk, all right? They're going to treat him like he's your brother. That's what you're going to do. Now, when you look at it, our life, look where they're looking at. And in this 50th year, there's something that God has in mind. We have this song. I can't remember the name of the song. Right up here. It says, Jesus is our Jubilee. You heard that phrase, right? What does that mean? What on earth does what does that have to do with my life? His Jubilee. Okay, but Jubilee, what does that mean? I am free to flow freely. And what did the Messiah say about him? He is at the gate, and you can go in and you can go out. You can go in and you can go out. You say, I don't want to go out. I want to stay in. Now, how many people are aware of what I had said many years ago about the Garden of Eden? You remember that Garden of Eden? You know, way back there in the book of Genesis? Now, Adam was not made from the dirt of the Garden of Eden. He's made from the dirt outside of the Garden of Eden, right? Now, he had to be placed or enter into that garden. Would he not have to enter in? How would he get in? There was a gate. Remember the gate? When he was finally thrown out, the gate was closed and he could never enter in. Wait a minute. And we talk about that he had to have the names of these animals of the field. Because see, Adam was made from the ground of the field. He wasn't made of that which was in the garden. Do you think in your mind that God brought every animal there was and brought them into the garden? Doesn't say that. He doesn't say that at all. We assume that he never left the place. We assume that everything... Wait a minute. He had a gate. Go in and go out. Go in and go out. Is that similar to what Messiah said? You and I get to do? Go in and go out. Go in. So when you come out of the Garden of Eden, does your conduct should be different? No. It wasn't required. I mean, Adam's conduct would not be different. The same thing as ours. Just because we're not, quote, in, quote, amongst the members of the family of God, in a quote, and we are someplace else and there's not a single person that thinks and walks or talks or acts like us, does that mean we can get time to do something we like to do and no one knows? No, we're free to go out. But what is our conduct to be? We know what it is. And by truth, you know, we have to look at this in this particular area about what does it mean to be of the grain. Messiah talked about the sowing. What was he sowing? Was he sowing tomatoes? Was he sowing carrots? Was he sowing turnips? What was he sowing? Wheat. And we know what the book of, we know what the days of unleavened bread is about. It's about the barley wheat. And we talked about what a sheep, gazeter. Gazeter is the harvesting of the wheat. So you talk about harvesting, that's what he's talking about. So now we're coming to this particular point. Every 7 years, what must we do? We think physically, I'll do this physical thing. I will not harvest. I will not sow. But I'll go out Monday, or maybe Sunday, and see if there's anything out there that I can, you know, eat. Fine, hunky-dory. The Bible doesn't say you can't do that, right? But you're not supposed to get out there and take more than what you need for that day. Now, he does tell us something, though. He does tell us that you must store in the 3 years and eat the old that has been put in storage. Now, how old is old? To God, it's 3 years. To us, it's 20, 40, 120 years. It's some, but it's built forever, you know. We want to make sure we got food to eat every single day of life. You know? Well, we'll store it here. Dry the food, dry the corn, dry this, dry that, dry, put water with it when we need it, but it's going to last for 20 years. I mean, it's silly when you look at it, right? At the same time, I'm just saying don't do that. I'm just saying at the same time, it's kind of hilarious, but here God says, by the way, I've got it solved for you. Now, the very fascinating word he said, let's see if I can't find here just a minute. Oops, I went too far. He says, I will do something on this. Let's see. Verse 20. Let's go to verse 19 first. We'll go to verse 19 for a moment. Leviticus 25. Now, the only reason I'm telling you this is because I think it's kind of fascinating. Here, verse 25, it says, the land shall yield her fruit, and ye shall eat your fill, and dwell there in safety. And if you say, what shall we eat in the seventh year? Behold, we shall not sow nor garden or gather our increase. All right, fascinating. Verse 21. Now listen to what God is, the creator of heaven and earth. Verse 21. This is the Yahuwah talking. And I will command my blessings upon you in the sixth year, and ye shall bring forth fruit for 3 years. That's a promise. I command my blessings upon you in the sixth year. Okay. Okay, yeah, the manna, yeah, the manna. Yeah, twice as much as the manna. We got that story. Wait a minute, we're talking for 3 years? Oh, that's good. And you keep on reading the story, you know, the seventh year. And what you get to sow and harvest, put that, no, you get to sow rather in the eighth year. But you really don't get to harvest until the ninth year. Because it takes a year for it to grow, right? And it says, by the way, 3 years, I have commanded. Now we say, oh yeah, God, yeah, we know it. You only command it if, circumstances are, I don't really think you're going to really command a blessing upon me, but nonetheless, I got 30 years of storage, just in case. I think it's funny. I'm looking at our world today and how funny it is. Yes, Bill.
How do we know when this comes about?
How do we know when it comes about? When what comes about? The 7 years come about?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what? He said, now this commandment is, when you enter into the land which I'm going to take you, that's when you begin. 40 years, they didn't do this. There was no wheat to harvest. There was no grapes to pick. There was nothing there. And men didn't even circumcise themselves for 40 years. Right? That's interesting. So we're talking about the timing. It starts, I think, starts when? He talks about the year of Yom Kippurim. That's the time you begin to count. Oh, that is the sixth year. It doesn't begin in the springtime. It begins in Yom Kippurim. That's when it all starts. You understand what I'm saying? Now, you may have a different thought, a different idea, a different opinion. That's fine. This is, we ask me the question, that's what begins. That's my personal opinion. That's all I can give you, Bill. All right? Does that work? Now, you know, it's very interesting that he is going to impose a condition on the land to produce a blessing. If what? We obey his statutes. If the obedience of the statutes are not done, there is no command of the blessings that's going to come on the sixth, seventh year.
Well, I guess I have a question somewhat related to his about the, you've got the Jubilee, but as far as I know, nobody's ever figured out when that is.
Well, I'm not telling you, I don't know what it is, so I'm not going to tell you what it is, I don't know. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, I'm just telling you where it began.
Yeah, but
what
I'm
I know
trying...
it began is that it was the year of Jubilee year. I would assume it would have began in the very first Jubilee year when the Israelites entered into the Promised Land. And I assume, my assumption, which is probably not worth much, I don't know, because I have no history, I have no documentation, there's no evidence there, the two be one or the other. That's my thinking right now. That's when it began. Now, what does it do with you and me? Spiritually speaking, what does it mean? This chapter is not just about the year of Jubilee, that you don't harvest the crop and you don't take in the grain. What is the subject of this chapter about in really true spiritual point? Free of movement. Free the person. Now, in the book of Isaiah, somebody got excuse me on that one. It's the latter part. About the Day of Atonement. He says, is this not what I have said? To feed the hungry. Just the opposite. What is the year of Jubilee to do? Free and feed, I can use that word, those who are hungry. What kind of food are you going to give them? Oh, I'm going to go and harvest. Physically get the grain in. No, because if we are the harvest, And he said, they are my servants, right? We know who they belong to. And when he talks about the servants, he's talking about that grain, he's talking about that wheat. He's talking about those that belong to him. When Messiah threw out the grain, and it says, this is the word of God. When you harvest or you pick up and you consume not physical grain, you consume and harvest yourself the word of the living God. Wow! Isn't that more important? Isn't that what he's talking about? Okay. What do you do on the year of Jubilee? You free, let everybody, the freedom is there, and everybody gets to partake of the whole thing. Even those goyims. Now remember, Israelites, and there is what? In the temple there was a, if I get this correct, excuse me if I got wrong, it's the court of the goyims. Why is it there for? Why are the goyims allowed to be in the holy place? Because why? What is our function, quote, as Israelites, in a quote, to do the to, for the sake of the goyims? We're supposed to serve them. We're supposed to feed them. We're supposed to give them the living word of God. As a priest of the Most High God, and all of Israel is a priest of the Most High God, there are different functions. The Apostle Paul clarifies that very clearly, doesn't he? Some are what? Apostles. Some are what? Evangelists. Some are what? Teachers, and so on down the list. Guess what? I'm down there. I don't want to go up there. Because you know why? This is what God has said. This is where you're going to be. I don't need to go anyplace else. And when we look at this book, 25th chapter, now I'm going to go into this. This is very fascinating to me. I hope you just bear with me for a minute. In verse 25, he says, if thy brother wax poor and has sold some of his possessions, what is the next person to him? What is he supposed to do? Protect him. Buy the thing and preserve it for your next of kin. Belongs to him. Now, what if you say, well, my brother sponges off of me? Well, that's the wrong approach. That's the wrong approach. That's not what you're supposed to do. He goes on down. And let's go another place here, which I think is very, very fascinating. Verse 20-35, same kind of statement. If thy brother wax poor and falls in decay, what are you supposed to do? What are you supposed to do? You shall what's that word? What does that mean? What are you supposed to do with it? What does that word mean? Take him in. Relieve him of this fallen to a horrible state beyond his control. Have any of you ever had a house burnt down you didn't know about and all of a sudden you have no place to live? No, probably haven't. Do you know somebody who has been burnt out and has been... They've fallen into decay. There's nothing there for them. And we say, well, let the government handle it. He didn't have insurance. That's his fault. I'm going to go do my own thing. Is that what it is? That's not what the Word of God says. You're supposed to help him out. And when you do, listen very carefully. Verse 35 is very, very important. Your poor brother, for something has befallen him really bad, and he comes to you, and you have the financial means to bail him out and protect him, what are you good to do? You do not charge him interest. You do not charge him interest. a poor person now, who has fallen into decay. Something tragic has happened. Perhaps there was an automobile accident, everybody died, and the woman's the only one there, and she survives. Who takes care of her? Oh, the state will. We always assume the state will, right? I pay my taxes, state, let the state take care of it. You know, let it go on some kind of relief somewhere. But that's not what the Word of God says. God never put that in the hands of government. He put it in the hands of the people of God. And that's what it's supposed to be. I must have cut myself off here. Where am I at now? And it says here now, in verse that, I'll read it. We are not to take advantage of a person that something has happened to. We're not supposed to say, I can make some fast money on this one. In fact, I will do something here which I will gain control of his property if he doesn't pay me back with interest. That's God's thinking, not mine. Right? That's what's written. You don't have to agree with it, but that's what's written. But he said, you will obey my command or my statutes. You'll obey my statutes. We know about the man who has a house in a city. What happens if he has to sell it? Unlike the land, he has a chance to get it back even 50 years or the year of Jubilee. It's a national thing, not a local thing. It's a national thing, not a local thing. He gets to get it back. What if he has a house in a city, in the city limits? He only gets 1 year. If you don't get it back in 1 year, it's gone. You'll get it back again. What about the Levite? Why is God showing favor to the Levite, but not?
He
owns cities.
Yes, but not
there are six. Yeah, but they own the cities. And even if the Levite in his own city has to sell his home, when is his deadline? Never. Is he restricted? No. He gets to flow freely. Did you get the picture? Fascinating. At the same time, we're looking at this book, we're saying, is this book more important? This chapter is really telling us about crops and grapes. Was really telling us how we should think about our fellow human being, especially those of the same household. Sometimes we have a tendency, because we are human, to zero in on, I'm going to make sure I don't harvest a crop on the seventh year. That's good, good. I'm going to obey the law. Not understanding completely what he's really trying to drive at. Because he said, in the year of Jubilee, you will charge according to value, this is the market value, right? If the many years, you get to charge more. And what happens if it's not very many years? What is this law of supply and demand? Supply and demand. Doesn't exist with God. Price is ruled by what series of events? Whether you're a bond servant or not, whether you have a crop or not, you have to sell part of your land or whatever. What is that time period? The 45 years. 44, 49 years. Period. 45 years. You will never, ever take advantage of somebody. He mentioned that here because he says, I am the Lord your God. In no ways will you do this. Any questions? Any ideas? Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm trying to make it as simple as possible. I'm not really that simple sometimes. But
They never did enforce it, though. Did they ever go according to...
Who was the they?
The Israelites. You know, they never followed through.
Okay, we have to be very careful whether they did or did not. I'm not saying what God did not require the government of Israel to do this. He required the people of Israel to do this. That's a different rules. He says, "You, as these are my servants, you will not, as an individual, do this to another individual, irregardless of whether there's a king or a queen or a dictator. This is my rules to you as a people of the priesthood, as individuals." You understand what I'm saying? We are the ones, as individual people, we are the ones that are held accountable, because what did Jesus say? When more you know, more is less expected of you. Oh, I got that wrong. Did I say, or what's the other way around? Less is expected of you if you know more. Did I got it wrong? But you understand what I'm saying. I don't care whether or not the federal government of our country does or does not do what it says. That's a dead issue to me. I don't care whether the city of Santa Rosa does or does not. I could care less whether the city of Santa Rosa does or does not. I only care about one thing. My Lord, my God, do I understand this? Help me, O Lord, my God, to do what you have commanded me to do. Does that make sense to you? Because that is who we are answerable to. Who is our head? Who is our boss? Are we sojourners on this earth? If we are sojourners on this earth like Abraham was, then we are answering to another, quote, government, end of quote. And that government is the kingdom of God, which is still in power. Right? Makes no... My mind, that's how I think. I may be, you know, kind of off. I don't have any harvest. Don't have any grain. I'm a guy that lives in the city. You know, if I sell my house, I only got... Not in the state of... If I sell my house, I don't get a year back. I don't. It's gone. Minute on paper, it's gone, right? I never have a chance to buy it back. But if I had the funds and the money to buy your house and your destitute, I must say to your nearest of kin, you have the right to buy this from me at the same price I have paid for it. Yeah, 1 year. I don't have to answer to the state of California. I have to answer to the Creator of heaven and earth. Just in case, I want you to know, I don't have any money to be able to answer. That's just down there, know. But the big answer is I have no money. Can't buy your house. Any more thoughts? Dan, I guess there's no more. Oops.
Is the Jubilee still observed in Israel?
No. I'm not saying they're not individuals in Israel who observe it. They're not individual Jewish believers, not believers in God, but believe God, period. Whether they're messianic or non-messianic, I'm not saying they're not. I don't know. I have not met any. As an individual person, I probably would have to tell you it's a strong possibility. It's probably at least one person out there that probably does it. But I don't know. How that person did it, how that person counts it, how they calculated it, I don't know. Even if they were wrong in the calculation of their 50 years, their heart is in the right place. They could be off. I don't care. They're looking at it and says, I can't do this to my brother. I will do this to my brother. I will not put him in bondage. I want to take advantage of him. And if he's in bad straits and I can help him out, I am not going to take advantage of him. Period. Ellie.
Since Messiah will probably come on a Jubilee year when he sets up his government, will the Jubilee years be fulfilled and observed during the next 1,000 years?
No, that wasn't asked the question. That was the question she asked. To tell you the honest truth, the answer is yes, it will be. People will be freed from tremendous amount of things. But they have to know what they need to be free from. And guess what you would have to do, or I'd have to do? We'd have to inform them what the problem is. And we need to let them know, yes, this one here, the one up there that's running the whole show, frees you. And you now are free to flow. Hearken unto his voice. Because you have to live it. You have to live it. You just can't be pretending, okay, now it's all over with. You have to live it. Another question.
How this relates to Shavuot, which is, of course, the Feast of Weeks, which is the 50th day
after. Right. Well, how would that relate? That's the 50th day of a certain time period, but not the year of Jubilee. Okay? That's 50 days. That had to do with a counting of a certain thing. Right. Only for the house of Israel. That whole issue had to do with the house of Israel.
You don't think?
Well, I'm just saying not a connection. I'm saying there's a parallel.
Okay.
One's 50 days, the other's 50 years. Okay? And the 50 years is a long period of time for an awful lot of things to be purified and cleaned up. All right? But they can be done with the word of the Creator of heaven and earth overnight. That's the most beautiful thing about Jubilee. Not for you or for me, but for the world. It is over with. Isn't that a fantastic story? The Jubilee relates to Yom Kippurim because of what it's supposed to do. Shavuot does not relate to that. It relates to the growth, the power, the increasing of the house of Israel to be able to lead them unto the next most important period to help the rest of the Goyims. Use that word, that they may have the flow of freedom to enter into in a time called Jubilee. And it's on the Day of Atonement when everything is washed clean and is removed. The beautiful, my mind, in my heart, most beautiful story that Jubilee has to say. It's not a physical thing for me, only I don't have a Jubilee year because I can't count. I don't know. And I'm okay. God didn't give me the information, and therefore I'm going to be ignorant without it.